Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for January 2012. This is issue number 322. Our address for the DX Audio Service is Post Office Box 473251, Aurora, Colorado, 80047-3251. The email address for general inquiries is sales, S-A-L-E-S, at nrcdxas.org. A yearly cassette subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S.-Canadian members is $28. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe or renew, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using the PayPal credit card system. Or if you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. But subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without any assistance. Well, looks like the FCC doesn't need any assistance this month. We have a very, very short AM switch on this edition as the FCC took off for an early holiday. So let's jump right in with the 2012 edition of AMS. And we'll start it off with call letter changes. 790 KWSW in Eureka, California is now KEJY. This is a correction from our last AM switch issue. 1010 WSPT in Stevens Point, Wisconsin is now WPCN. 1060 WGGQ in Newport, Tennessee is calling themselves WNPC. 1230 WJBB in Haleyville, Alabama is now WWWH. And the new 1560 stations, CP in the village of Superior, Wisconsin is WIVS. Under construction permits on the air, we have only one, 1310 WJUS in Marion, Alabama. Their CP for U1 5,000 watts day and 33 watts night is now on the air. That's lowering their night power by a whopping 1 watt. Grants for new stations. The new 960 station in Mississauga, Ontario has had their CP granted for U1 2,000 watts day and 280 watts night, and they're going to have a news and talk format. By the way, Canadian stations must apply to their version of the FCC, which is the CRTC, for format changes. Under actions, 1080 KCNM in Saipan was granted a CP for U1, 1,100 watts day and night. Now, wouldn't that be a great treat in 2012 to hear that station stateside? 1150 KOLJ in Quanta, Texas has been granted a CP for 530 watts day and 77 watts night. They also had to replace a tower because one of their old towers collapsed. The new tower is shorter than the old one, thus a slight increase in the power level in order to make up for the same geographic coverage. WFGN 1180 in Gaffney, South Carolina has had their call letters and license reinstated. They were pulled after a spat with the FCC. 1250 WKDL in Warrenton, Virginia was licensed for U4 5,000 watts day and 32 watts night. WKDL had a CP for U4 7,900 watts day and 125 watts night, and then they amended that application to U4 3,000 watts day and 125 watts night, and the latter has now been granted. And we'll throw in under actions, CKDY 1420 in Digby, Nova Scotia, has been granted a CP to replace their CKEN 97.7 Kentville simulcast with locally produced programming, which includes CKDY1, which is on 103.3 in Weymouth. Under applications to the FCC, 1330 KTAE in Cameron, Texas has now applied for U4, 1,800 watts day and 135 watts at night. And 1550 KRPI in Ferndale, Washington applies for U4, 50,000 watts day and night, which increases their nighttime power. under amendments to applications, and we have only one. The new station on 1550 in Shasta Lake City, California. The initial application for this new station was on 1580 with U4, 250 watts day and night. This new amendment asks for U4, 250 watts day, and raising the night power to 5,000 watts. Well, get your pencils and erasers out. It's time for dismissals and deletions, with several stations drifting into the history books. 590 WGTM in Wilson, North Carolina. License canceled and call sign deleted. Same for 1350 WQNX in Aberdeen, North Carolina. License canceled, call sign deleted. 1400 CKGR in Golden, British Columbia has signed off as their 90-day simulcast time with the new FM has expired, so now they're FM only. The new station on 1500 in San Angelo, Texas, will not happen. That application for the new station was dismissed by the FCC. 1520 WKMG in Newberry, North Carolina, license canceled and call sign deleted. And on 1590 WPVL in Platteville, Wisconsin, their CP for U2, 930 watts day and 470 watts night was dismissed by the Federal Communications Commission. So WPVL is going to remain at U2, 1,000 watts day and 500 watts at night. And that wraps up this edition of AM Switch for January 2012. If you have anything to add, correct, or hear something of note, drop us a card or a letter to the DX Audio Service at the address at the beginning of the magazine, or you can just call up the Musings line at 419-741-0205, 24 hours a day, and leave it as a muse. Until next time, this is Fred Volpe sitting in for Dave Alpert, wishing you a very happy new year. And now let's turn it over to the man from Minnesota. Here's Mark Dernberger with the Bandscan. National
Radio Club. Let's begin our 2012 column by resuming our State of the Stations reports. And this month, we'll open the ledger on Los Angeles. I got to tell you, the detective work involved in bringing out the high-level history of these AM stations is a lot of work, but really a lot of fun. We have the complete FCC microfiche record from about 1925 through the mid-1990s as an accurate baseline. From there, we supplement by collating Googleized station histories and then resolve any information conflicts by referring to Dernberger.com for the listener reports and dial schedules as published in the various consumer mags of the day. Hopefully, pulling all this together results in a fair degree of accuracy, and Terry Livingston Hughes will keep an eye on the LA report for us. Because the basin is so big, in the interest of time, we've had to narrow our report to the 28 stations or so within 35 miles of downtown Los Angeles. It's the usual mix of sports, ethnic, talk, and religious. A classical music station is among the offerings, as well as a full-time gospel outlet. The dial starts at 570 and goes to 1650, and there's only one X-band station. As usual, we'll start at the longest wavelength, KLAC on 570, or what was once called 526 meters. KLAC came on as KFPG in 1924, built by radio set salesmen. The engineer was a fellow named Gerritsen, who had been dabbling in broadcasting in the very early years. The records show the station operated on 1260 with 500 watts, and the call sign changed to KMTR in 1925. They were then assigned to 810, 790, and in 1927 to 570, where for a while they shared time with KPLA. The new owners of KMTR announced themselves as radio at the top of the dial and featured dance bands and lots of Hollywood hoo-ha. KMTR was given an increase to 1,000 watts day, 500 night in 1931. The newly created FCC gave them a kilowatt full-time in 1934. NARBA confirmed the frequency in 41, and in 1946, the station received 5 kilowatts day, as well as a new owner. Dorothy Schiff, publisher of the New York Post, bought the station and renamed it KLAC. It was pop music into the 1960s. KLAC added a talk format known as two-way radio, including Joe Pyne. Then it became a middle-of-the-road station playing music from the 40s and 50s, along with soft rock and non-rock hits of the 50s and 60s. By early 1970, KLAC evolved into more of an adult contemporary format, focusing on soft rock hits from 1964 up to that time. In 1965, KLAC added a directional antenna and gained 5 kilowatts full-time. In 1970, the station dropped adult contemporary for country. In 88, the station was sold to Melrite. In late 1993, they fired all their DJs and newsmen and dropped country for Westwood One's satellite-fed standards format. KLAC stayed with that format until 2001. In 1993, KLAC had been sold to Shamrock in a group deal along with KZLA. In 1995, the station was absorbed by Chancellor Media, and KZLA was swapped to Bonneville in the late 90s. Chancellor would form AM-FM Incorporated when it merged with Capstar in 1999, and in 2000, AM-FM Inc. would merge with Clear Channel, making KLAC a Clear Channel station. In 2001, KLAC became a talk station, then in 2002, to an adult standards format, becoming the Fabulous 570. In 2005, Clear Channel conducted one of its famous multi-station flips. KLAC's format and branding went to Extra 690 AM, and there it became the Fabulous 690. Meanwhile, the Extra Sports format simulcast on XETRA 690 in San Diego and on KXTA 1150 in Los Angeles was moved to KLAC, which aimed at both Los Angeles and San Diego. Today, KLAC is branded as AM 570 Sports LA, with Fox as the base sports network, and a nice lineup of local pro sports coverage, including the rights to the Los Angeles Dodgers broadcasts. Their tower shares the signal of KFWB 980. Big Daddy KFI is next, one of the very few AM stations that never had to move its frequency. Actually, their sign-on in 1922 was on 642, but in 1927 they were centered on 640 with 5 kilowatts. Legend has it that the very first transmitter was a 50-watt jerry rig made from a crank telephone generator. Well, by 1931, KFI was doing 50 kilowatts. The station was among the group of 1A clears that filed for 500 kilowatts, this in 1936. NARBA confirmed them on 640, and the half-million-watt application was dismissed in 1942. In 1955, KFI received FCC authority to transmit subaudible tones as a test of a civil defense alerting system for the city of Los Angeles. KFI's subaudibles could be used to trigger the emergency sirens in the city. The FI in KFI was an abbreviation of Farmers Information. Every winter evening between 1924 and 1956, KFI would deliver a frost report that would tell citrus farmers whether to turn on wind machines or light smudge pots to keep their orange and lemon groves from freezing. For many years, KFI was the Los Angeles area affiliate of the NBC Red radio network. From the beginning, KFI was a full-service station not wedded to a specific music format. Until in 1973, KFI was purchased by Cox Broadcasting. They did a successful job of Top 40 programming, and KFI shed its sports until the early 1980s, when the station blended into a more adult format and moved back toward more news coverage, even mixing comedy with its regular programming. The station gradually drifted to more and more talk and less music. Once they were a full-time talker, arch rival KABC sued KFI to stop them using the slogan Talk Radio. So the slogan More Stimulating Talk Radio was born. Rush Limbaugh was a star on KFI beginning in 1989. Cox owned the station until 1999 when they sold KFI to Chancellor Media. And, of course, like so many other stations, that took them down the well-traveled road to Clear Channel ownership. All of which takes us to 710 and KSPN. 710 is a heritage frequency on the West Coast and has boasted a number of famous call letters as well as a number of famous voices. KSPN began on 1110, as we'll learn later. 710 began life as KRLO, actually on 681.4 kilocycles in 1927. That was rounded to 680 in 1927 as part of the move from wavelengths to frequency labeling. 250 watts, which they then took to 1390, then 1190, where the call became KEJK. Then in 1928, it was 1250 with 500 watts and a timeshare with KFON. Next, it was 1170 and a call change to Heritage KMPC. KMPC stood for Owner Macmillan Petroleum Company. In 1939, power was increased to 1 kilowatt nights, 5 day. A year later, KMPC was allowed to use the KECA nighttime tower site as a part of a move to 710. This was followed by a permit for 5 kilowatts full-time if a directional antenna would be added. NARBA reaffirmed the 710 assignment, and 10 kilowatts day power was authorized. 50 kilowatts day followed in 1946 with conditions, and after KMPC satisfactorily proved there were no interference issues, KMPC was also granted 10 kilowatts night. In 1955, KMPC-2 was granted test authority for subaudible tones to trigger air raid sirens. During the years the station was owned by Gene Autry, KMPC was a credible sports authority, owning variously the broadcast rights to the Rams, UCLA Sports, and Angels and Dodgers baseball. Throughout the 1950s and most of the 60s, KMPC played middle-of-the-road music. The stars on the station included Wink Martindale, Gary Owens, and Robert W. Morgan. In the early 1980s, KMPC changed to talk radio and fired its DJs, but a few years later, KMPC returned to standards as the Station of the Stars. In 1992, they became one of the first all-sports stations on the West Coast. KMPC billed itself as all sports, all hours. However, in 1994, the station was sold off to ABC and began a general talk format to complement KABC AM. The station later evolved toward a women's talk format called The Zone, with the call sign KTZN, which featured hosts of interest to women. That was about 1996. Next, the format was Radio Disney under the call KDIS. The original KMPC call eventually ended up on 1540. Well, then in 2003, ABC swapped its 710 Radio Disney and 1110 ESPN radio formats, 710 becoming LA's ESPN radio outlet, KSPN. In 2006, KSPN rebranded from ESPN Radio 710 to 710 ESPN and adopted the tagline, Experience Sports. To the mighty 790 and KABC, it came on the air in 1925 as, you ready for this, KNRC. Although some records suggest the call was KVFV, no such call letters appear in any of the many databases. KNRC came up on 208 meters, or 1440, with 250 watts. The KNRC call stood for Keep Novelties Radiating Constantly, in reference to some of their What's New programs. The next move was to 1260, then to 800 with 500 watts. The call letters became KTM in 1928, and the station moved to 780, where they got a kilowatt day, 500 night, time-sharing with KELW. By 1935, the ID became KEHE, and power was increased a year later to 5 kilowatt day, 1 at night. Still on 780. The feds allowed KEHE to merge with KELW to eliminate the timeshare. And here the records differ somewhat. Some historians don't show the KEHE period. The FCC record shows that Earl C. Anthony, who also owned KFI, bought the station in 1939 and the call letters became KECA. A year later, the station had a nighttime 5 kilowatt authorization with directional antenna, and NARBA moved them to 790, but throttled them back to 1 kilowatt at night. Then in 1944, the station was sold to the new ABC, formerly NBC's Blue Network, divested from NBC under the FCC's network duopoly rules. KABC was the pioneer of the talk radio format, going all talk in 1960 and syndicating many of their talk shows nationally on the ABC network. The station also held the rights to the Dodgers for a number of years. Though the station has a great signal, KABC declined in the ratings following the station's takeover by Disney in 1996. Citadel became the licensee in 2006, and most recently the name on the license is Cumulus Broadcasting. For 2012, the Dodgers have moved from KABC to KLIC 570, and Vin Scully will still be heard from the ravine. KRLA on 870 first appeared on the air in 1933 as KIEV, 100 watts on 850 daytime, then moved to 870 by NARBA. The secondary assignment to 1A station WWL meant the station would be a daytimer with limited power. They were able to reach 500 watts daytime only in 1966, then were allowed 5 kilowatts a day only in 1971. By this time, the breakup of the 1As and loss of protection of WWL was almost a certainty, but it was another 10 years, 1981, before 1 kilowatt was allowed at night with the directional antenna. The KRLA call letters earned their place in history on 1110, as we'll see, and they were moved to 870 in 2001 when KSPN went to 1110. The early KIEV had several formats, including Top 40, Standards, Big Band, and Talk, as well as sports coverage, including horse racing from Santa Anita and Hollywood Park. Today, KRLA is a conservative talk station on 870. Comes now Boss KHJ 930. They went on the air in 1922, built by the Times Mirror Company. The call letters were said to stand for kindness, happiness, and joy. Looks like they quickly grew to 500 watts, and in 1927 were moved to 740, during that wonderful time when stations changed frequency about as often as folks changed clothes. Then to 720, where they could operate a kilowatt. Next was a request for 750, granted in 1928. On to 900, where they applied for 50 kilowatts and were turned down in 1930. In 1934, they increased day power to 2,500 watts with a kilowatt at night. And then in 1940, 5 kilowatts full-time with a nighttime directional. NARBA moved them to 930. During the late 20s and early 30s, KHJ was the West Coast hub for CBS radio, until CBS turned their backs on them and purchased KNX. In 1947, KHJ was sold to Don Lee, a West Coast networker, who eventually owned 21 stations, most connected together in the Don Lee Mutual Network. In a prophetic move, in 1950, KHJ was transferred to the General Tire and Rubber Company, and then to RKO. The big story of KHJ, of course, is Boss Radio. Its alumni included Casey Kasem, Robert W. Morgan, Charlie Tuna, Bobby Ocean, Charlie Van Dyke, and the real Don Steele. The format brought high ratings to the station through the 1970s, until FM radio became dominant. In 1980, 93 KHJ switched from Top 40 to country music. The country format, which boasted, "We all grew up to be cowboys," lasted 3 years before the station flipped to an all-oldies format, The Boss is Back, using the original Boss radio jingles. In 1984, KHJ tried a Top 40 format called Car Radio, highlighted with traffic reports every 10 minutes. And then on the evening of January 31st, 1986, after an extended farewell program, the station became KTRH with a format called Smokin' Oldies that featured hits of the first 10 years of rock and roll. The station used AM 930 as its on-air ID. Now, RKO General. They were under a long-term investigation by federal regulators due to unethical conduct at their television stations. RKO was eventually ruled unfit to be a broadcast licensee and forced by the FCC to sell off its broadcast properties. In 1989, KRTH, AM, and FM were sold to Beasley Broadcasting, which immediately turned around and sold KRTH AM to Lieberman Broadcasting. It became a full-time Spanish-language station, adopting the call letters KKHJ in honor of its historic calls. As time went by, the station staff wanted to bring back the legendary three-letter call sign, but the FCC hadn't issued three-letter calls since the 1930s. So KKHJ came up with a plan to convince the FCC that the station could not use the Spanish pronunciation of its call letters on the air, because the pronunciation of the first two letters in Spanish, caca, sounded like caca, the Spanish vulgar slang word for feces. As a result, whenever the call letters were used, they had to be pronounced in English. This proved somewhat awkward, so the station collected letters from listeners and community leaders and lobbied the FCC to allow the station to drop one of its Ks. The commission allowed the station to return to its original call, KHJ. The change became official in 2000. Today, KHJ is known as La Ranchera, and many of its jocks and listeners are still pining for the boss. And so we move our magnifying glass to the 980 dial spot. KFWB was first licensed in 1925 to Warner Brothers. In 1927, they operated 750 watts on 1190, then 500 watts on 830, before moving on to 850. then back to 8:30 with a kilowatt, then to 9:50 time sharing, and then unlimited time solo with 1,000 watts. All of these changes within 24 months. By 1934, they were at 2,500 watts and then 5 kilowatts day. In 1937, KFWB was granted authority to rebroadcast 30-second bits of information from a plane using the transmitter of the Pasadena Police to acquaint the public with traffic problems. This was probably radio's first airborne traffic reporting. By 1939, the FCC allowed KFWB to operate full-time with 5,000 watts. This made them one of the few stations in the country to operate non-directional full-time at 5 kilowatts. NARBA 1941 moved them to 980, and in 1958, KFWB received permission to co-locate on the tower of KLAC, as we said. Disc jockeys, or jocks, were the game of the day, and in 1958, under new owner Crowell Collier, legendary Chuck Bloor transformed the station into a top 40 format called Channel 98 Color Radio. KFWB became one of the most highly listened to stations in the nation. KFWB was purchased by Westinghouse in 1966, and 2 years later, relaunched as an all-news radio station. The station promoted itself with its slogan, "You give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world." Its goal was to give a full newscast every 22 minutes, the average commute time in Los Angeles at the time. Westinghouse became CBS, which also owns KNX, the only all-news station in Los Angeles. KFWB and KNX famously feuded as all-news rivals for years. KFWB then began to add sports. They added the Dodgers games and many National Football League games. The NFL broadcasts stopped after the 2007 Pro Bowl, and the Dodgers left KFWB after the 2007 season to return to KABC. With that, the slogan, "All News, All the Time," returned. Beginning in 2008, KNX and KFWB were jointly branded as CBS News Radio LA. In addition, there were no longer separate field reporters for KNX and KFWB, and CBS News Radio LA reporters filed the same stories for both stations. On September 8, 2009, the station adopted a news talk format, adding syndicated satellite shows. And beginning with the 2009 season, KFWB began broadcasting weekday baseball games of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, although the flagship remained the Angels-owned KLAA. And in 2009, KFWB and the NBA's Los Angeles Clippers signed a multi-year broadcast rights pact. Today, KFWB is branded as News Talk 980. Well, this detective work is a lot of fun, and I hope we're not boring you with the reporting. We have a long way to go, but the next installment of our thrilling story will have to wait for 30 days. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you then. And until then, best wishes for a great DX season, and good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. It looks like the Federal Communications Commission is out looking for pirates in Florida, as they released a document on December the 16th saying that they issued a monetary forfeiture of $10,000 to Neil Davis for his pirate radio station on a frequency of 96.1 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It seems that on October the 17th, the Enforcement Bureau issued a notice of apparent liability for $10,000 to Mr. Davis, and he has not yet filed a response to that NAL. Also, a forfeiture order in the amount of $15,000 was issued to John E. Kreitzer, Jr. for a pirate station operating on 95.1 at Lake Park, Florida. This was after the FCC was monitoring that station and found him on the air.
A Lee County, Florida man was arrested for broadcasting gospel and public service announcements over 107.5 megahertz without a license. Dunbar Community Radio, which catered to the Dunbar, Florida, Fort Myers area, was shut down on December 9th after its operator, Al Knighton, was arrested for illegally broadcasting shows and music. I think it was worth it letting people know we can create something in this community that we can be proud of, Knighton told WBBH-TV. Knighton said he doesn't have any regrets. Neither does Ron Jenkins, chairman of the Fort Myers Citizens Police Review Board. He said he hosted a show on the station. Our community, he says, has to be educated. We have to have the opportunity to speak to one another. Otherwise, it's going to be business as usual. The FCC and local media outlets were not doing their job representing our community. He goes on, our community has been stymied and hasn't been able to grow for decades because we haven't been able to talk to one another. Fort Myers police helped with the FCC bust, and Captain Dennis Eads admits it was a difficult crackdown. It's because they're providing a service that made it difficult, but the bottom line is that it is illegal. As for the several local leaders that appeared on the illegal radio station, police say they don't expect any more arrests. Fort Myers Councilman John Streets, who appeared on the radio station as a guest, said that while he believes in the group's message, the law is the law, and they had to be shut down.
You know, Mark, it's not often that we hear of a DX test making a newspaper, but it did. This is titled WWNY is heard in Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, 775 miles away. It's picked up on a special broadcast November the 1st from Pine Lodge. This appeared in the Watertown, New York Daily Times and comes via John Herkimer. When Robert W. Gorich of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, twisted the dial on his living room radio set early in the morning of November the 1st, he tuned in on a radio station more than 775 airline miles away. The station was WWNY in Watertown. The quality, according to Mr. Gorich's message to WWNY officials today, was good and signal clear. As a matter of fact, Mr. Gorich has heard of Watertown before. His grandfather went west 85 years ago to Iowa from Sackett's Harbor. WWNY has received 36 reports from 14 states on the special DX broadcast of November the 1st, which went out from Pine Lodge. The test show featured music by John Urban's 16-piece orchestra and the Glenn Foltz Sextet. James W. Higgins, who supervised the program, and Charles Pierce wrote the show and were master of ceremonies. Other announcers participating were Gene Grant, Lyman Manser, Bob Telford, and Vern Wenderoff. Mrs. Helen McCall was the vocalist with the orchestra. The 775-mile extreme distance point proved a bit disappointing to station officials, but it was a bad night in the East and Midwest, with many natural rather than man-made interferences, such as static caused by fog and other atmospheric elements. Here are some of the comments received of a non-technical nature. From Ted Weister of Schlueskill Haven, Pennsylvania, signal clear. Program good and interesting. Albert Tewell of Cary, Ohio wrote, much natural static, but a good signal. Arnold E. Gehrig of Miamisburg, Ohio wrote, signal good, some interference from WEUS in Florida. Herbert Campbell of Athens, Pennsylvania said, high noise level, but signal strong and good. Mr. Campbell also remarked about the WWNYDX program of November 5th of 1941. Robert J. Gilchrist of Waterville also mentioned swell show and good signal. From Don Wharton of Chicago, Illinois, excellent fidelity, full response, good listening. Alan E. Arnold of Milwaukee, Wisconsin wrote, atmospheric conditions bad, but signal very understandable. Appreciated the program because it was different from DX shows put on by most stations. John T. Tweedy of Oakhurst, New Jersey wrote, excellent volume, 100% modulation, natural static was extremely heavy. Vincent C. Statson of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania wrote, good program, really enjoyed it, signal very strong. David F. Thomas of Proctorville, Ohio wrote, listened on a car radio between Proctorville and Huntington, West Virginia. Very nice signal. WWNY has often been heard at his home, but this is the first time he's heard it in the car in two different states. From Stanward R. Morris of Bradfield, Massachusetts, an excellent show. William J. Prater of Grimsley, Tennessee wrote, strong signal strength, but extremely heavy static. Tone quality excellent. Some interference from WEUS in Florida, but WWNY signal was stronger. Program was sure different from the usual run of DX programs. Bernard Duffy of Staten Island, New York said, "One of the most elaborate, interesting, and entertaining specials that our organizations were ever in favor with." Joe Pelletier of Altoona, Pennsylvania, an engineer at WVAM Altoona, wrote, "Very interesting program." Leo Herz of Chicago, Illinois. Mr. Herz last heard WWNY in 1941. He writes, "Since then, much water over the dam. 3 years in the Army with the 101 First Airborne. Signal fair, much static due to dense fog." Leonard Cruz of Dubuque, Iowa wrote, "Good signal, no interference whatever. Dubuque is approximately 750 airline miles from Watertown. It was the first time I've heard WWNY. Others who wrote in were Watson Wendt of Hill City, Minnesota, Henry Holbrook of Chevy Chase, Maryland, and a member of the radio club, the Newark News Radio Club, and the New Zealand DX Club. C.B. Conley of New Cumberland, Pennsylvania, James F. Shoup of Dayton, Ohio, George Sanza, Jr. of Rockland Lake, Rockland County, Frank Wheeler of Erie, Pennsylvania, Ray B. Edge of Buffalo, Robert S. Knox of Newton, New Jersey, also Carol H. Weirich of Parksville, Maryland, Gustav Magnuson of Providence, Rhode Island, a member of the National and Newark Radio Clubs, and the Scandinavian DX Club of Sweden." So, do you care to venture a guess when that article was written? In a response in DX News Magazine's Musings to the Members, December the 19th, 2011, Ron Schiller of Coeur d'Alene, Iowa wrote, "I enjoyed reading the article about WWNW 790 in Watertown, New York's reflections on their NRC DX tests, presumably circa 1950. Well, it was actually November 1st of 1948, as it turns out. As a 60-year off-and-on member of the National Radio Club, I can give a little insight into a few of the members mentioned in that article. David F. Thomas of Proctorville, Ohio, operated a river ferry at that southern Ohio river town and was much reviled for some of his outlandish DX claims. A very controversial guy, as I recall. William J. Prater of Grimsley, Tennessee, who I corresponded with as a teen, was later incarcerated in federal prison for his involvement in a union murder plot, and he died in prison in the 1980s. Bernard Duffy lived in Staten Island, New York, and he was a lifelong wheelchair-bound DXer as a result of childhood polio, an excellent DXer, especially considering his location. Len Cruz of Dubuque, Iowa, was one of the foremost domestic DXers of the day and very active on the CPC committee in arranging DX tests. Henry Holbrook, or Hank Holbrook, of Chevy Chase, Maryland, DX'd about every frequency imaginable, AM, FM, shortwave, beacons, you named it, logged thousands of stations that way. Ray B. Edge of Buffalo, New York, was a police officer and a longtime publisher of DX News. Carol Weirich of Parksville, Maryland, published an annual AM log with great accuracy, as I recall. Then there's Ernie R. Cooper of Brooklyn, New York, better known to many of us as Lefty. He tirelessly edited the DX Musings column for about 30 years. Upon retirement, he moved to Provincetown, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and hosted a weekly FM show there. By the way, the show was called Forward March. It was all march music. I remember Bob Gorich, Ted Weiser, Albert Tewell, Stan Morris, I think he was a cranberry farmer, as I recall, Frank Wheeler, and Gustav Magnuson as being active contributors to the bulletins. It's nice to see their names in print once again. For AM stations, the future may be on FM. WBZ Strength, WEEI sports programs have delayed the change in Boston, but younger listeners are mostly ignoring the old system. Chad Restrick used to listen to Sports Talk, WEEI AM 850, but he couldn't always pick up the station's AM signal during his commutes from Hanover to his job as an administrator at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. "It was tough to hear because the signal wasn't that good," said Restrick, 28 years old. 2 years ago, he switched to the Sports Hub, WEEI's competitor, at 98.5 on the FM dial. "It's perfect. I've never had a problem with them," he said. Stations like WEEI are losing their audiences as listeners who grew up with AM radio age, and younger listeners insist on the richer sound of FM. With its weak AM signal and competition from the Sports Hub, WEEI, the dominant sports talk station in Boston for years, was failing in the ratings. So in September, the station took a spot on the FM dial, simulcasting its AM programming on a former pop rock station, WMKK-FM 93.7. In markets such as Atlanta, Chicago, San Francisco, heritage AM news or sports radio stations like WEEI are taking over FM counterparts to simulcast their programs. Some have done it to the appeal of younger audiences who have grown up with FM. Other outlets have done it to blunt a competitor. And for the most part, the results have been better ratings. Until recently, Boston avoided the trend because two of the most popular radio stations are, on AM, WBZ AM 1030 and WEEI. So far, no other local AM station has revealed plans to follow WEEI to the FM band, although increasingly that's where the listeners are. Almost 3 out of every 4 radio listeners in the United States say that they will never tune into an AM station, according to Arbitron, the rating service. In Boston, 81% of people listening to radio at any given moment are tuned into an FM station, Arbitron said. Boston stations are late to switching from AM to FM because having the Red Sox on WEEI by itself has done a lot to keep AM in the consciousness of listeners, said analyst Scott Feibusch, publisher of Northeast Radio Watch newsletter. It hasn't hurt that WBZ has remained as strong as it has. For WEEI, the decision to simulcast on FM was a matter of numbers. In October 2009, 2 months after the launch of the Sports Hub, WEEI was capturing 5.3% of Boston's listening audience. A year later, its share had dropped to 4.2%. By September, when WEEI made the move to FM, the Sports Hub was finishing first amongst males aged 25 to 54, a demographic advertisers covet. Amongst those listeners, WEEI ranked 8th. But the decision to simulcast on FM is working for WEEI. Counting its signal on both AM and FM, the station's average weekly listener audience is up 27% since the simulcast began, according to Arbitron's October ratings. WEEI was also up 46% amongst men aged 25 to 54, although the Sports Hub was still tops in that demographic. And WEEI's total audience numbers more than recovered. In October, WEEI on average had 824,100 weekly listeners in Boston, a 5.6% share. The Sports Hub had a 4.3% share. "We knew that it would be a huge benefit for us," said Jason Wolf, WEEI's vice president of programming, of the simulcast. "We had a lot of trouble on the AM band reaching those younger people who normally listen to FM." There have been similar results in other markets. Last year, for example, the Atlanta news talk outlet WSB AM started simulcasting on FM. Together, its AM and FM broadcasts now form a powerhouse, ranking 2nd and 5th in the most recent ratings period. The question is whether the migration to FM signals the beginning of the end for AM radio. Jack Casey, an Emerson College radio professor, called WEEI's FM simulcast a bellwether indicating that in order to get younger listeners, you have to be on FM. Most younger listeners never frequent the AM band. They hardly know it exists. The migration may accelerate, said Northeast Radio Watch's Fibush. Since WEEI began its FM simulcast, there are only two AM stations that rank amongst the top 15 in Boston by percentage shares of total listening audience. One is WBZ, which draws about 6% of listeners in Boston. Only WXKS-FM, 107.9, which has a 9.5%, draws more listeners in Boston. The other popular AM outlet is the conservative talk station WRKO AM 680, which ranked 14th with 2.3% of Boston's listeners. Mark Hannon, senior vice president and marketing manager for CBS Radio, which owns five stations in Boston, said he launched the Sports Hub in 2009 to boost the flagging ratings performance of then rock music station WBCN-FM. The Sports Hub replaced adult contemporary music station WBMX, or Mix 98.5, which moved its programming to 104.1 FM, formerly the home of WBCN. As for WBZ, also owned by CBS Radio, there are no immediate plans to place its programming on FM, Hannon said. WBZ has a potent signal that reaches far north as Canada and as far south as the Carolinas at night. That station transcends everything because it's such a large signal and a station with 90 years of heritage, he said. WEEI's Wolf said that his station's FM simulcast has improved not only the ratings, but the reach. The direction of the signal is unimpeded, Wolf said. It's like a blanket now, where there were pockets on AM. Between the AM and FM stations, WEEI can be heard in southern New Hampshire, the Merrimack Valley, Metro West, and Worcester, as well as Greater Boston. Dimitri Rizos, 42, is one listener who followed WEEI from AM to FM. Its clarity is better, he said. A physician who listens to WEEI on his morning commutes from Danvers to Lowell. Going to FM is like putting the cherry on top of the ice cream. And that story was from the Boston Globe, November 9th, 2011.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side two.
KFM.